folks. Welcome to another Auto Central show, SA's number one motoring podcast powered by Auto Trader. And I'm your host, George Mini, and I have none other than Wandile Sishi in the house again. And if you happen to miss the live broadcast of our podcast, you can always catch up by visiting our YouTube channel, youtube.com/AutoTraderSA. How's it going, Wandi?
Hey, George, how are you? Super excited to be in the passenger seat again. Let's see where we're going to go.
Yeah, let's see where we're going to go. So it's no secret that cars have been getting more and more expensive. But just how much are you having to pay for a new car today versus in previous years? And has COVID-19 changed the entry price of cars? What do you think, Wandi?
So yeah, my first response to that is definitely. So I have had personal experience of dreaming of this car, and then I go and check on Auto Trader, and I realize that my wallet just can't fit it. And that obviously has changed from when I was like 10 years old dreaming about the cars that my brother and my family members were driving. And now when I try and buy the same cars, it's a lot tougher. To say the least.
Well, do you think they're getting unrealistically expensive?
Well, unrealistically is kind of, you know, it's kind of harsh. I think cars are getting more expensive generally, for a lot of reasons and for, you know, a lot of different reasons for different people. But in terms of unrealistically, in terms of, you know, everything else that we're buying on a daily basis, even on the long-term basis, I think they're kind of moving with the times.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, the average cost of a financed new car in June 2020 was 321,715 Rand. I mean, from our data, Wandi, what is the average price of a used car? It's lower than that, right?
Yeah, it's much lower. I think when we looked at our Auto Trader reports, what was revealed is that on average, a used car was setting people back around 280,000 Rand. So you do get, you know, 40,000 Rand cheaper, you know, give or take a few thousands if you do go used. Yeah. But yeah, you know, new car is kind of what everyone wants. So 321 is a bit higher than what people are, you know, completely ready to be spending on.
Yeah, well, I mean, if we go back to 2009, the average property prices are around double the average car price. Would you say that kind of sounds fair? At the end of 2018, the average house price was 2.5 times greater than the average car price. So in 2009, it was double. And in 2018, about 2.5 times. So if you just use property prices as a yardstick, you know, it's increased by 0.5x to what it was in 2009. I mean, do you think that's an indication that cars are more expensive?
Well, if we look at housing prices from, say, 2009, that's just after the big crash. Mm. And we saw that there was a huge uptick in terms of housing costs straight after the 2008 market crash. Whereas cars, on the other hand, haven't had as big as a jump in terms of average pricing. So I think with regards to houses, people have kind of lost a little bit more versus with cars. I think they've kind of kept a pretty consistent growth range over the years.
Yeah, I mean,
should see the different parallels.
Cars didn't suffer from the housing bubble, right? So you know, that increase of 0.5 times, is that not indicative of that housing bubble having come down and crashed?
Yeah, that's in the fact that, you know, inflation was always going to have a hit on everything. You know, people have essentially been gaining more money in their pockets, so therefore it makes kind of sense for cars to become more expensive.
I mean, our cars,
if we look at the sort of cars that we had then versus now, I think we are getting a little bit more value. There's a lot of things that you would have paid a massive premium back in 2008 or 2009, whereas now they sometimes are standard with the cars that you're buying. So, you know, different ways of looking at it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot more technology in the cars today, and you know that yardstick of property prices versus car prices is a good yardstick. Except I think there's some anomaly with the housing bubble in 2008-2009. Hopefully the measurement was after the crash, which meant that you know there was no bubble involved there. But do you think that cars in South Africa are more expensive than cars overseas?
Whoa, like off the top of my head, I would say, I think it's kind of the same. I would expect an OEM, if they're going to be like selling a car, let's take a Golf, for instance, in USA, to give us something comparative to our current inflation rates, as well as the South African markets. I don't think they're going to inflate the price much or take away unless we're building that actual model in South Africa.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of comparative. I don't think the OEMs are, you know, trying to steal from anyone. Like, I don't, yeah.
I mean, the Telegraph did a survey, right? And they listed the average cost of buying an economy car and running it for 1 year in different countries. And it seems as though South Africa is not that an expensive place to own a car. You know, the USA topped the list at 412,000 rand, 24,000 pounds, but 412,000 rand, and that is running the car for a year. And South Africa comes in 10th at 187,000 rand. Why do you think that is?
So I think this is looking specifically at economy cars. I think in South Africa, an economy car would be a little bit cheaper, just determined, or rather based on the fact that most of our population in South Africa can kind of afford an economy car.
Yeah.
So I think OEMs and people who are pricing these vehicles are kind of basing it not just on inflation or anything like that, but demand of the vehicle.
Yeah.
The more demand there is in any sort of region, the more the cost is going to go up. So I think that's kind of the big thing. Mm. And just kind of meeting people halfway, not just putting a price tag on a car to make profits.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody or any OEM in South Africa has, the ability to just put a price tag on a car. A lot of the things that make cars expensive in South Africa are beyond the OEM's control or the manufacturer's control. And one of those are taxes. You know, imported vehicles it costs 45. It can be as high as 45% of the car's total price. I mean, so to put that in perspective, if you're paying 200,000 rand for a car, you effectively are going to pay another 100,000 rand on top of that. I'm just rounding it off to 50%, but you're going to potentially pay another 100,000 rand on top of that for tax if you import the car.
Well, that's the cool thing. That's the cool thing about being in South Africa is that a lot of our favorite cars or a lot of models are actually built here that you can purchase domestically.
Yeah.
So the import tax, I don't think, would hit us too hard in terms of that. But, I mean, it's definitely food for thought when you are trying to purchase or in the process of purchasing a car to see, you know, are you being ripped off essentially by import tax, or are you getting, you know, the most value for your money?
Well, I mean, this import tax story is a theme that we've been carrying for a while, especially when it comes to EVs. You know, how do we adopt EVs when the import taxes are so high and we're not yet tooled to manufacture or assemble electric vehicles? You know, the OEMs are pretty capable of doing it, and I'm sure that's going to come in the future. But at the moment, it's as high as 45% to import a vehicle and higher for an EV, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when you're purchasing an EV car, it's almost double that. You know, I mean, there's additional tax that you're going to get with that, because it's not just the import tax that you're paying, but it's also essentially buying, some people, you know, liken it to buying a golf cart in terms of the tax that you're paying on an EV car. So, you know, there's lots of barriers for people to get into essentially being greener or being more responsible with their purchases, which, you know, the person takes the knock, but the knock is so unnecessary and so inflated that it's going to deter a lot of people. So we definitely have to start having these conversations with, you know, governments and people in general. in understanding these taxes.
The powers that be. And cars assembled in South Africa don't necessarily escape these taxes because there's still taxes levied on imported parts and the vehicles parts that are used to assemble. So so that's built into the cost of the car anyway. Just because they don't incur the import tax on the whole car doesn't mean that there's no import taxes, because those parts still have to come across the border, right?
Yeah, well, that's something that I actually never thought of. You know, it doesn't matter what car you kind of get, you still need to consider the fact that your car is going to need parts at some point. It's just how things work. Things deteriorate over time, and you're going to incur these costs. So whenever you are thinking about purchasing a car, I think it's really important to understand exactly how much the maintenance of it and sustaining it is going to cost, because it's not just the price tag that you have to worry about, but all these other things that come in afterwards.
Well, I mean, I was surprised to learn that, you know, this part I'm not surprised to learn, but the next part I am, is that extras that come with particular car models dramatically differ from country to country. I mean, that's normal, I guess. But in South Africa, entry-level cars tend to include a higher-than-average number of extra features. Consumers expect and even demand things like ABS brakes, airbags, air conditioning, and sound systems, whereas that's not necessarily the case on entry-level cars in other countries.
Yeah, I read a stat somewhere that spoke to, I think it was BMW or one of these I guess, premium brands. I learned that South Africa is one of the biggest purchasers, I think, of the BMW or the Mercedes in the world.
Yeah.
I think it just goes down to who we are as South Africans. I think we do, you know, expect a little bit more. And I guess we're ready to pay a little bit more for those extra things. So it makes sense that South Africa would get base models which are tweaked or have more options features than everywhere else in the world.
Yeah. So, you know, in high-end cars, buyers can expect a range of luxury extras, right? So in the base-level cars, you get a lot of standard features that other countries don't get. But extra luxury items in higher-end cars, Bluetooth integration, cruise control, parking sensors, leather seats, and these are often standard features.
Yeah. I mean, it's super interesting to think about. Like, when you go and buy a car, do you know that this is the base model? Or, you know, when you see an ad of a car when it's launched and you're like, okay, I'm going to be paying X amount. And then suddenly when it's, you know, finally on the market and you can purchase it, you get like a huge price tag associated with the car that you want to buy. It's going to scare people off. But understanding why that's the case, that's kind of the key in ensuring that you're attracting firstly the right person.
Yeah.
And secondly, getting as much sales as possible.
Well, another way to kind of get all the features is buy a nearly new car or a used car, and you can find them on autotrader.co.za. So, talking about new cars and EVs, we are lucky enough to have the new mini electric vehicle hit the shores of South Africa, which I'm very, very, very keen to actually see in the flesh. And we have none other than our very own Chad Lakoff with us to unpack and explain the Mini SE. Got no relation to my surname, don't worry, and neither Lawrence Minis, so we're not related to the car. But Chad, tell us about this Mini SE. But first of all, how's it going?
Hi, how you guys doing?
Yeah, good.
Yeah, Mini SE. It's a bit of a foot in the water, toe in the water for Mini at the moment. So they're largely testing the waters to see how the uptake will be on what is a full electric Mini three-door hatch.
And Chad, this is hailed as the cheapest EV in South Africa, you know, at a price tag of over, 600,000 rand? Doesn't sound cheap to me.
No, I mean, 600,000 rand is nothing to be sneezed at, but there's no denying the fact that it is the cheapest EV in the country. The S model comes in at 642, and the L model comes in at 722.
Wow.
The L model is sort of the one that you want. It has a couple of the nice little creature comforts and features and that sort of thing. But when you consider that its nearest full electric rival is, what does the i3 go for? The i3's, yeah, 720 odd itself. It's virtually the same. I think it's 300 rands difference between the two of them.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, there's really not that much in it.
Yeah, there's not that much in it between the i3 and the Mini SE. And talking about the i3, I believe that the Mini SE's base is based on the i3. Is that true?
So the running gear and batteries are based on the i3.
Okay.
Of course, the i3 was built in a sort of ladder chassis style way, where it had the platform and the batteries and the motors and all that type of thing. And of course, that was rear wheel drive as well.
Yeah.
And it then had the body sort of lumped on top of it, this composite body just plopped on top of that. So a real, let's say archaic way of approaching vehicle building and that, but it is still one that is used today. Almost like, you know, like I say, like ladder chassis, whereas the Mini still sort of uses a slightly more, bespoke sort of monocoque style design.
Yeah.
They still use Mini base suspension and that. They've just modified the componentry from the BMW i3, the batteries, the motor and that, and put it into a shape that is very familiar to us.
Okay.
And rather easier to digest than what the i3 was when it launched, let's be honest.
So, yeah. I've seen
an incredible amount of marketing for this SE. It's literally all over my Instagram. It's everywhere.
That's called algorithms.
Yeah, of course. I assume that I'm the market that they're trying to, you know, get to.
Yeah.
But it seems like they're putting a lot of eggs in this basket. And one of the biggest concerns that I had, because I did consider it, I won't lie, was the range. Is this 600,000 Rand going to give me the same range as, I don't know, like an i3, for instance?
Well, yeah, it's pretty much going to give you the same range as an i3. I mean, it's got the same 32.6 kilowatt hour or 94 amp hour battery pack, and it uses the same motor. I don't think there's much variation in terms of their weights either. I think that's why they went with the Mini instead of developing it or plumbing this into another BMW offering, like a 1 Series or something of the sorts. I think it made sense to put it in the smaller, compact, lightweight Mini. Unfortunately, the country that you live in sort of hurts that.
Mm.
And I'm not talking about our political situations with our power suppliers and that sort of thing. It's rather our hot climate.
Oh, why is that? That's interesting.
Yeah, that makes things tough. You heat up a battery, it sort of depletes its sort of energy levels. It doesn't perform at optimum. It's got an optimum performance range in terms of temperature. And for the most part, and especially in summer months, we sit, you know, on the high side of that scale. So that depletes it. Other countries are going to get about 235 to 270 kilometers out of a full charge, whereas we're only going to get 217. Let's be realistically, you're not going to run it to zero, so you can work with 180, 190 kilometers and leave something in reserve to make sure you get to a plug.
That's not a big range, hey? I'm surprised that the car is, you know, only capable of 200 kilometers. We got things like, I mean, let's not compare it to Tesla. I suppose everybody compares every electric bloody car to Tesla. But I suppose that is the benchmark, you know. 300, 400, 500 kilometers. What's restricting the Mini from doing those sorts of ranges? Is it just the battery pack? Is it the technology or just the number of batteries?
Yeah, the modular cell sort of layout and that. It is rather clever in the fact that it's got individual modules in the battery pack. So if there's an issue with one of them, you don't need to replace the entire thing. You can just replace that module. Mm-hmm. It's got a chipset on it and a daisy chains with the rest of them. So, you know, that makes maintenance or the concerns around maintenance and battery life and that, it sort of does away with that. And it's a little bit of a trade-off because it's not the most effective and efficient. George, I mean, you're a big proponent of EV as well. And you know, a lot of it is just limited by the lithium-ion nature of the batteries.
Yeah, we're limited by the mechanical structure, not mechanical structure, but the actual physical nature of the battery itself. Now, what is this car like to drive, Chad? Is it like driving an i3 if you close your eyes?
No, it's like driving a Mini.
Okay.
And that's the best part about it is, I said it when I reviewed the i3, that thing has stupidly narrow tires. You know, a base model Uno came out with the same width tires back in the day, just to give you an idea.
Yeah.
But they were little 13s or 14 inches. I mean, the i3 runs on 19-inch wheels, but these stupidly narrow tires. Whereas the Mini has more sensible tires, so it's got the same great grip levels. It's got the same suspension as a three-door mini hatch. It's a little heavier by about 147 kilograms, I think it is. So that's like maybe carrying one of your larger friends around with you on a drive.
I've got a few of them.
Or two of Wandy and myself. And there's a little extra weight. It does ride slightly higher. It's about 18 millimeters higher or so. And this ties back in again to Wandy, what we were chatting about just now, where it's hot climate. So in order to provide additional cooling for the batteries at rest in the tray of the vehicle, in the chassis underneath the floor pan, they've raised it a little bit just to provide a little bit of air, a little bit of additional cooling, just to extend the battery life. You don't want those batteries getting too hot, negatively impacts your range.
Okay.
So just a final question from me is with regards to, so I didn't even know that the SE was coming until it arrived essentially. So let's say I'm excited about this Mini. I'm like, yeah, this is the one for me. I'm super ready to buy this car, but I'm about to get rid of 600,000 Rand plus minus. Should I wait a little bit longer, or is this something, is there other launches that we, you know, are anticipating in the future? Should I just wait a little bit, or should I just go ahead and buy this car?
You know, you're starting to talk a little bit of politics here as well, because it's largely the politics that are sort of dictating what's happening with the introduction of EV in our country. Large sort of taxes and penalties, not penalties, but...
No, they are. I mean, the taxes.
Large taxes that are being imposed on the importation of these vehicles, which is just pushing these prices up to a rather silly place. I mean, other countries have got concession for it. You know, they're going to give you a tax rebate instead. But hey, you know, we could lament this until the cows come home, or you run out of range on your Mini SE. But I would say go for it now, because Birdie says that there's only going to be about 50 units.
Ah, okay, there we go. So there's going to be a limited number coming into the country. Yeah. So there we go.
So, I mean, George, we do know that the BMW iX3, the full electric X3, launched 2 years ago in Beijing, is scheduled to be launched internationally, and it may do really well in South Africa as well, especially considering that South Africa manufactures BMW X3s. Yes. We don't have the capability of manufacturing electric ones just yet, but with a massive amount of componentry and that available for right-hand drive and left-hand drive models, we may even see a bit of a knockdown assembly-style thing happening locally.
Yeah.
And that may help the price, but chances are you're not going to see that for under a bar. At the moment, and with your only real alternative being the i3, the Nissan Leaf, rumor says that you can special order one of those.
Okay.
But I wouldn't put my eggs in that basket just yet. The Mini SE is probably going to be a pretty decent way of going about things.
Well, there you have it. The Mini SE, full electric. If you want to go and have a look at Chad's review on the Mini SE, go to autotrader.co.za under our review section, and you will find the Mini SE reviewed by none other than the one and only Chad Lakoff. And I know that you had a limited amount of time with this car because everybody wanted part of it. So your final thought on the car, let's give it a score out of 10.
It is slightly compromised, so you know, let's just work with the cons here quickly. It is slightly compromised in terms of range. Charging infrastructure outside of city centers is a little limited, so it's not really viable there. But it still drives like a Mini. It has virtually exactly the same space as a regular Mini. They kept the boot at 211 liters.
Wow.
Exact same as. So they haven't encroached, so you're not losing anything there. It drives really well, and the sort of torque delivery is really addictive. So, you know, that's like a check in the good box. Yeah, I'm going to hover 6.34.
There you have it from Chad Lakoff. 6.34 for the Mini SE.
Let's round it off to seven.
Okay. All right. Well, I think Wendy, we should start keeping these scores from Chad and the guys. It's a 7 out of 10 from Chad. Thanks, Chad. Appreciate that as always, and have yourself a lekker week.
Fantastic. Thanks, guys. You guys have a great one. Cheers.
Well, Wandi, Mini SE, I'm sure you're going to want to drive one soon. Let's get into Ask Auto Trader. And, you know, every day people send questions to Auto Trader and some motoring related questions, other car related questions. And so Wandi and I will now attempt to answer some of these questions. And what's the first question we got there, Wandi?
Yeah, we've got three burning questions, and the first one comes from Golisto.
Mm-hmm.
He or she, not sure if it's male or female, but they asked, can I buy a vehicle from a dealer if I have my own private vehicle finance?
Well, I mean, you know, my view on this is don't do it. And the reason I say don't do it is often people walk into a dealership and they've got their own private finance or they're paying cash. And what they don't realize is that the dealership is incentivized to finance the vehicle.
Incentivized how? As in,
so the dealership earns a commission. So the dealership earns a commission on the finance on the vehicle. So therefore, if you walk into a dealership with your own private finance, the dealer is going to make nothing on the finance of that vehicle, which means that the dealership is not incentivized to give you any kind of discount.
Okay. So that's – I was trying to find where does it link to the person who's paying or trying to purchase the car.
Yeah. So often people walk into a dealership and say, oh, give me a discount. I'm paying cash. Well, so what?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. The dealership is not incentivized to reward cash because the dealership will get paid for the car via the bank, and that is like getting paid cash anyway. So while it seems like a good idea to have your own private finance, it's not always a good idea. I think that's the first perspective. The second perspective is that the dealership can often get you a better deal than what your private finance can get, because the banks are competing with each other anyway. So if you can I buy a vehicle from a dealer if I have my own private finance finance? The answer is yes. Is it a good idea? No. What else have we got there, Wandi?
So the next question comes from Gottfried, and he or she asks, does Auto Trader sell cars in other countries? So I have family in Mozambique, and I've been asked this many times. So I'm excited to put this conversation to bed.
Well, the first thing to one of the misconceptions about Auto Trader is that we sell cars. Well, we don't. Do we buy cars? We don't buy cars either. So we're not a car dealer. So that's the first misconception. And so we don't sell cars to people in other countries. The answer to that's no. We are a marketplace that helps the buyer and seller meet and conclude the transaction. So therefore, can somebody buy a car via Auto Trader or through Auto Trader from another country? The answer is yes, because even if you're sitting in Mozambique, you could get in touch with a car seller via autotrader.co.za and conclude the deal and import the car into Mozambique. So the answer is we don't sell cars. Can you buy a car from a dealer in South Africa in another country? Yes, you can, and you can do that through Auto Trader.
Yeah, I'm going to say to all my cousins in Mozambique listening, now you know. Okay, and then the last question comes from Ongezwa, who asked, what is the difference between a balloon and residual payments? And do financing a pre and used car have the same sort of payment plan?
Well, a balloon and a residual payment, there's no real difference when financing a car. Balloon payment, residual payment, they're just big payments at the end. It's your final payment. Your final payment is usually the residual or the balloon payment at the end, and it's balloon because it's inflated versus the other payments. And the principle works as follows. You pay a reduced amount for deferring the big payment at the end. And sometimes you can get up to 15, 20, and I've seen as high as 30% residuals, which means that if you're buying a car for 300,000 Rand with a 30% residual, your final payment is 100,000 Rand. That's what balloon or residual payment is or means. In a nutshell, that is. The difference comes in when you set up the payment or the plan itself. A balloon payment, like I said, is exactly the same as paying a deposit on a motor vehicle. You're just deferring that deposit to the end.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, I mean, it's confusing. I think it's a very valid question. I think a lot of people don't understand that the price tag that you see doesn't mean that's what you're going to be paying. There's different payment plans that are very personalized to your specific kind of needs.
Yeah, residual and balloon payments were created by financial institutions to bring down the monthly cost of the repayments. That's what it does. But the what I encourage you to do is to calculate no residual and what is your total number of total amount that you're going to pay. You should get it on the document that you receive when you buy the car, and the dealer can tell you as well. And then calculate your total amount of payments across the life of the finance with the residual and without the residual. So equal amount of payments across the payment plan. And you'll find that the balloon payment or the residual payment plan means that you pay more for the car because the interest is being calculated at a on a higher capital base all the time.
Yeah, interesting. Awesome.
Well, Wendy, that's all we have time for this week. And thanks for joining, as usual, to our listeners. And none other than the one dealer, Sisha, joining me today. Any final thoughts, Wendy, before we go into the rest of our week?
Yeah, there's lots of F1 things happening. So, you know, I think maybe next week we might be able to touch on a little bit of all the action that's happening there. But otherwise, just stay driving. And if you're looking for a car, always search Auto Trader.
Always search Auto Trader. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Another week of Auto Central done and dusted. And myself, George Minnie, and one dealer, Sishi. See you next time.